really dirt. So she started to chastise him and started to become concerned. He said, no, all the cowherd boys, especially Balaram, they're all saying these lies about me. They just want to get me in trouble because I beat them at play. And now they want to get even with me. So she, Mother Yasoda wasn't accepting that. So she said, open your mouth. So when Krishna, dutiful son to his loving mother, he opened his mouth. And when she looked inside his mouth looking for the dirt, she saw something that was quite extraordinary. And she was able to see, to her amazement, the entire creation, all the planets, all the manifestations of all the planetary systems, the stars, everything. She even saw herself and Krishna in the mouth. She saw herself looking at herself in Krishna's mouth. Of course, at that point, she started to realize, my son is not ordinary. And then Krishna realized that his mother was losing her mood of vatsalya ras, parental affection. Because in that mood of parental affection, if there's any understanding that my son is God, then awe and reverence comes in. And as soon as awe and reverence come in, one cannot chastise, one cannot, you know, be a superior. One becomes automatically in the mood of an inferior or subordinate. So Krishna realizing this, that he immediately took away her understanding. And again, she was back in her parental affection. So sometimes Balaram does that. He gets Krishna in trouble. And that story is related to another story when Krishna swallowed the forest fire in Vrindavan, when all the cows and cowherd boys were trapped in the forest fire. And they were in trouble. And they called out to Krishna for help. And Krishna came, and he told them to close your eyes. And then Krishna swallowed the entire forest fire within his mouth. So Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that the reason why Krishna told everyone to close his eyes is because he was concerned that Balaram would say, now he's eating fire. So she would go to Mother Yasoda, and then he would have to go through that whole thing again with Mother Yasoda. So he asked everyone to please close your eyes. And in the last manifestation, the conjugal ras, the Madhurya ras, he becomes Radharani's younger sister, Ananga Manjari, and assists Srimati Radharani in her transcendental loving pastimes in serving Lord Sri Krishna. So Lord Balaram is found in any ras, and this is the only personality that serves the Lord in all five rasas, that is Lord Sri Balaram. Sometimes we say that the spiritual master is either coming from the line of Lord Nityananda Balaram, or he's an eternal associate of Srimati Radharani. So we pray to Lord Balaram in order to get the mercy of, he is considered to be a manifestation or the original spiritual master, Adi Guru. All spiritual masters come from Lord Balaram, Lord Nityananda. Actually, we can approach the process of approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's the process of approaching from lesser to higher. Of course, we explain like that. In order to get the mercy of Krishna, we must get the mercy of Radharani. You know, before we can get the mercy of Radharani, we must get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the blessings of Lord Chaitanya. And before we can get the blessings of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda's blessings must be there. And he is a representative, or he is the original spiritual master. Sometimes we say that Srila Prabhupada is divine grace. And actually, it was a manifestation of the mercy of Lord Nityananda, Lord Balaram. See, Balaram in his mood, as Balaram in with Krishna in Vrindavan, sometimes he would kill demons, and sometimes he would dance And he also had his own set of gopis. He would dance with the gopis also. So he played a variegated role. But in his role as Lord Nityananda, he was simply giving out special mercy. Rather than killing the demons, he was uplifting the demons by giving them the chance for devotional service, by giving them the chance to chant the holy names of the Lord, by becoming purified through the process of chanting the holy names of the Lord. So in this way, Lord Balaram actually manifested himself in a most wonderful and very merciful form as Lord Nityananda. But as Lord Balaram, we read the many pastimes, practically he was killing so many demons, one demon after another. Would you like to hear some demon stories?
Yeah.
Yes? Killing of the demons. Devotees really enjoy demons being killed. There's a class of spiritualists. They like Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan with the gopis, but when it comes to hearing about Krishna killing demons, they're not so enthusiastic to hear these things. But devotees are very enthusiastic. When every time a demon was killed, cowherd boys would say, "Well done, well done! Jai Krishna! Haribo!" And they would celebrate by having a nice feast. There was one demon. He actually, to take you back a little bit, this is an interesting demon. He was the son of Bali Maharaj. And his name was Dainuk. Now, Bali, of course, after he got the mercy of Amanadev, he actually became a great devotee of the Lord. But he was born in a demoniac family. He came from a line of demons. And he had one son, and also one daughter. He had a son named Dainuk. You know, demons are demons, and they act like demons. So he was a demon. So one day he was in front of the ashram of Durvasa Muni, and he was acting quite rowdy. Making all noise and just acting like a fool. As it was explained, he was acting like an ass. So Devasa Muni, he was getting quite disturbed by Dainuk's activities. He said, "So you're acting like an ass? So you mean, and then I curse you to become an ass." So that's how he actually took birth in Vrindavan as Dainuk Asur, the demon in the form of an ass. One of the associates of Kamsa, who came to Vrindavan to assist Kamsa in his various pastimes of trying to kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they lived in one section of Vrindavan known as Talavan. And in that section of the forest, there were so many wonderful fruit trees. In fact, they had the best fruit trees anywhere in Vrindavan. But because it was controlled by Dainuk and all his associate asses, ass association. Every group has their association. Anyway, you have to give them some kind of credit. But the fruits in this section of the forest were the best of all fruits. And the cowherd boys, they were always wanting to get these fruits, but they could never go there because of Dainukasura. So they came to Krishna and Balaram, and they said, "There's some very nice fruits in Talavan, but there's being..." See, Dainuk, what he would do is, him and his ass friends, they would eat as much fruits as they could, and then when it was ever left over, they would send to Kamsa. And this way, there was no fruits for anyone but them and Kamsa. So the cowherd boys were saying, "Krishna, we would really like to have some of those fruits. Maybe you could help us." So Krishna and Balaram, they came to that section. And then they started to shake the trees. Is that correct, Maharaj? You have to keep me in line on these pastimes.
Yeah.
In other words, there was this shaking the trees, and the fruits were starting to fall to the ground. And then that disturbed Dhenukasura and his associates. So he came running there. Who's in my forest disturbing my fruit trees? No one would dare to come into this forest because he was such a powerful ass demon. The whole idea is this is called ass mentality, the idea of lording it over. So the Prabhupada explains that. It's like you go into a country. Before you can go into another country, you have to have passport, visa, and then you have to be harassed so many ways by immigration. And then, because you can't disturb the sense gratification of another country unless you get all kinds of permission to do it. Enter into that area of sense gratification. So this is the idea of ass mentality. And Dhenukasura was just showing us how the conditioned soul in the material world is living, like an ass. So they were shaking Krishna and Balaram. Balaram was shaking. They were shaking the trees, and the fruits were falling. And Dhenukasura, he came, and he saw, and he came charging at Balaram. And as hard as he could, he kicked him in the chest with his hind legs. Balaram just realized something happened. He was busy eating the fruit. He realized something else was going on. He wasn't at all fazed by the kick of Dhenukasura. For his own transcendental pleasure and to help Dhenukasura realize that he was out of line, he grabbed him by his hind legs and he just swung him around. And then he was swinging him around, his life left his body. And wanting to use, because whenever the Lord does something, he does it for many reasons. So not just to kill a demon, but to get some more fruits. He threw him up in the tree, and they hit the tree. And all the fruits came flying, falling down. So there were so many fruits. Usually the cowherd boys would have to make different kinds. They had different kinds of weapons. Sometimes they would throw rocks and knock the fruits down. Sometimes they would have rocks with strings on it, more sophisticated kinds of tools. But this was really convenient. Just by throwing this ass demon, so many fruits hit the ground. And then his associates, in the form of other asses, they came and they started to attack Krishna and Balaram. And then one by one, as they were, Krishna and Balaram were just grabbing them and just throwing them. And they were flying up in the trees, and all the trees were covered by all these asses. And they were all different colors too. And Prabhupada said it was a panoramic scene. All different color asses decorating the trees. And of course everyone was happy, and they had a big fruit feast. There was another demon. There was many demons actually. One Maharaj told this morning, which was the story of one demon called Palumba. Palumba, he was actually... the cowherd boys would play these various games. They would divide into different groups. It would be Balaram's group, and then it would be Krishna's group. And they would play different games, jumping on each other's back, or... sometimes they would have to run, see who would get there first. Or sometimes they would play these games where they would count the different footprints of the different birds and who could count the most. And this way they enjoyed transcendental pastimes in Vrindavan. So they played this game, and the losers would have to carry the winners on their back as a way of honoring the winning team. So this demon, Palumba, he took the side of Krishna. He was on Krishna's team. And Krishna's team lost. Balaram's team won. So this demon had to carry Balaram on his back. So after Balaram was on his back, he's carrying him, and he said, yeah, here's a chance to kill him. So he took him away from everyone else and went deep into the forest. And then Balaram started to realize this is not an ordinary cowherd boy. And gradually he started to assume his hideous form. He had a big black face, the copper colored beard he had, mm-hmm. kind of copper eyes, and then Balaram, realized that this was a demon, he just met with his fist and punched him in the head. And his head started to bleed. Of course, immediately he was killed. And it's explained that the blood coming out of his head and going down his body looked like a liquid manganese coming off from a beautiful mountain. So it was a beautiful scene. This bleeding demon, which was the size of a mountain. And so when the Lord actually does something, it becomes very nice, although he's eliminating a demon. So he killed Palumba. Palumba Sora. There's another demon. His name is Davida. Now this demon was very, very interesting, Davida. Davida used to be one of the monkey soldiers. He was actually an ape, a gorilla. And he fought on the side of Sita and Ram and Lakshman and Hanuman against Ravana during the Battle of Lanka. And he had a very deep love for Ramchandra. But he didn't like Lakshman. He had some problem with Lakshman. I don't know what it wasn't explained what the problem was, but it's just the way he was, I guess. So due to that offense, that mentality, he lost the grace of the Lord because he was envious of Lakshman. And he started to associate with another demon called Narakasura. And he became a demon. And this is a very important point, that by offenses one loses one's taste in spiritual life. And when one loses the taste, then one may also lose a desire to associate and to engage in the process of devotional service. And then one may seek association that is undesirable. And then one gradually, through that offense, one spirals gradually back into the material world again. So it's very, very important, and it was very much emphasized by the Lord, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and in the scriptures, that one must be very, very careful to avoid offenses. Offenses to the Lord, offenses to the holy name, offenses to the deity, and offenses to the Vaishnavas. Especially offenses to the Vaishnava. Vaishnava Apurana is considered to be the most devastating of all offenses. So Lord Chaitanya, he gave the formula for avoiding that. Always remain humble, tolerant, not seeking respect for oneself, and always giving respect to others. This simple formula is humility, tolerance, with a desire to serve and to please the Lord, and to not looking for any honor or respect for oneself. This is the quality or the consciousness that it will insulate and elevate a person in devotional life, insulate them from Maya and elevate them to Krishna consciousness. So by this offense to Lakshman, he became a demon, although he had fought on the side of Ram. And he wasn't such a nice demon. He would come. He was big. He was like a big giant mountain. And he was always harassing the sages when they were performing their various yagyas and different rituals. And he would desecrate their offerings. Sometimes it explained he would pass stool and urine all over the place. And he was big, so it was big stool and big urine. So he was quite abominable. He was not the ordinary demon. He was just... Gorillas are not very well-mannered. And being in the form of a gorilla demon was... So the sages, they petitioned, actually, Lord Balaram to help them. So he came. And there was a fight between Lord Balaram and Davida Gorilla. And it's explained in Krishna book, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that fight was quite fierce. That Davida Gorilla was picking up trees and throwing them at Lord Balaram. And Lord Balaram was just knocking, pulverizing the trees as they were coming. In fact, the fight went on so fiercely that the entire forest, the whole area where they were, was cleared of all trees. There was no trees left. He was just picking up trees and just throwing them at Balaram, and Balaram was just smashing all the trees to pieces. And then he started to pick up rocks and throw them at Balaram, and then Balaram was smashing the rocks. So he would, after a while, became like a baseball. And Balaram had a, I think it's explained like that. He had a, a tree, and the demon was throwing rocks, and Balaram was hitting the rocks. Sometimes the devotees say this was the original baseball. Everything, all our, the origin of everything comes from God. So even we may even see something mundane. Of course, finally, Lord Balaram killed the demon, satisfied the sages. So there's so many wonderful stories. By hearing the glories of the Lord and chanting the glories of the Lord, the tendency of the tendency of the living entity is to want to glorify and to hear about someone who is powerful, important. And in the material world, people hear about politicians, rock stars, sports heroes. But that kind of hearing and that kind of glorification just keeps one's consciousness and actually lowers one's consciousness in the modes of passion and ignorance. One becomes more and more contaminated by the lower modes, and one's desires for sense gratification become more and more stronger. But when we dovetail our propensity to hear about and to glorify others in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all glorifiable, there's nothing. When Krishna kills, or when Balaram kills, or when he performs his loving pastime, whatever mood of activity he performs is purifying. Is purifying. When you hear about Krishna killing or Balaram killing, you become purified. And if you turn on the TV and you watch some violence, some war, or some killing, you become putrefied. you become affected by lust, anger, greed, the same thing you're watching. But in the same way, these same similar activities, when performed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although they may be classified as violence, they're transcendental. They have nothing to do with the modes of material nature. And they purify our consciousness. So much so that the devotees become enlivened when demons are killed. The devotees become enlivened when we hear that, on the battle of, when Krishna was fighting against Jarasandha, it's explained that the devastation, if you read that section in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's explained that the devastation was so intense that there were like rivers of blood and bodies with different parts of bodies floating in these rivers. And the body parts looked like islands and trees and rocks. It was so devastating and so severe that it can't compare to any kind of violence that the movies can come up with. And you hear about that and you become Krishna conscious. Yeah, and you become happy too. But if you turn on the TV and you watch, what do they call it, Terminator, or what is the other people? I don't watch TV anymore. But what is it? What is that? Oh, Rambo. Rambo 1, Rambo 2, Rambo 3, Rambo 4. Now they got Rambo 5. Is it? I think they stopped at 5, wasn't it? Because I guess Rambo 3... Three? Oh. It's an authority. We're only up to one up to three. And sometimes they can go on. So, but when you hear these pastimes, when you hear these activities of the conditioned soul in the material world, it just brings your consciousness down. So, sometimes we find in our spiritual circles, devotees go outside and start looking towards these things. And trying to find some satisfaction in there. That's why the Lord has manifested his pastimes in a variety of ways, just to satisfy whatever propensity or topic we might want to hear. Everything is there. It's all there in Srimad Bhagavatam and various scriptures written by the Goswamis and other great acharyas. And if we simply hear about the glories of the Lord and chant the glories of the Lord, we will always become satisfied and happy and elevated in our consciousness. Okay. I guess I should stop there. I don't want to take up too much time. Yes? Yes, Mother Premananda. Is that all right if we take questions from Maharaj?
Just one. Isn't it generally there is no mixing of rasa? How is it accommodated in the future of Balaram? All these different
That is exclusive to Lord Balaram. Only Balaram can serve. He serves his older brother, or his younger brother, Krishna, in various rasas in order to increase Krishna's pleasure and to help him in his pastimes, assist him. So he takes all these five different rasas in order to expand the Lord's pastimes in each one of the rasas. But there's no other living entity, either anywhere but spiritual or material, that has that facility or can do that. Only Balaram can do it. He also comes in conjugal ras too, as an Anga Manjari. He's the younger sister of Srimati Radharani. That is also a manifestation of Balaram. He's so eager to serve that he's always in every aspect of service. So this is the interesting, although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's the best of all servants. And he manifests himself in the material world as the spiritual master, who is the best of all servants, who is in one sense non-different than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the spiritual master is considered to be servitor Godhead, who is also offering service to Godhead. So the spiritual master is considered to be an aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's also a manifestation of Lord Balaram.
An exception to the rule.
Yes, he is the rule. And there's no other rule. He is.
Yeah. Well, Srila Rupa Goswami has analyzed the science of rasa, Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu, and he's explained that some rasas mix and some don't mix, just like with prasad, for example. Bitter melon can mix with rice, but it can't mix with sweet rice. So some mixing is compatible and some is incompatible. And he's explained which are compatible and which are incompatible. Now, Vatsalya Ras, parental relationship, and Madhurya Ras are incompatible. And we can imagine why. You know, we don't indulge in that type of relationship in the presence of our superiors, our elders, our parents, because we're always respectful in their presence. So with Lord Balaram, Radha and Krishna are it's like they, especially because they're
paramour. They're not open about their relationship, except with the most intimate friends. But Balaram knows, but he doesn't talk about it. And they know he knows, but they don't. They don't exhibit their love for each other in his presence, because he's the older brother, and he's like an authority figure. So the Madhurya Ras is incompatible with the Vatsalya Ras, and therefore Balaram cannot serve as the older brother in Madhurya Ras. He has to take another form to serve in Madhurya Ras. But all of the rasas are ingredients in Krishna's pleasure. Just like if we were just to eat sweet rice all the time, it wouldn't be tasteful. But when there's some bitter melon, rice, dal, chapatis, and sweet rice, it's very tasteful.
The spiritual master manifested in
Lalita Devi. So when Maharaj was explaining how Balaram serves the Lord in every rasa, and he's the original spiritual master, I thought how the spiritual master, as Lord Balaram's representative, can, you know, manifest himself in the appropriate way to accept and encourage the service of the disciple in the particular mood. As far as the devotees taking pleasure in hearing about the demons being killed, I thought of one incident when we were preaching in Bombay, and at the time Srila Prabhupada had entered an agreement to purchase Hare Krishna land in Juhu, but the owner was not conveying the land to Srila Prabhupada in ISKCON, and he seemed to be wanting to, you know, take the money and keep the land. Or in other words, to cheat Srila Prabhupada in more explicit terms. So, he was like a demon, if you could say he was like a demon. In fact, I think he was a demon.
You know that. But a demon. Moving his spirit just like what you said, demon.
Recently I met my godbrother Gurudas Prabhu, who was one of the first devotees to meet Mr. Nair. And he described the first meeting with Mr. Nair, one of the first meetings with Mr. Nair. And you know, Mr. Nair became very agitated. And he stood up and he started like ranting and raving, saying, I am Krishna, why are you talking about another Krishna? I am Krishna. And, you know, Gurudas could not do anything to make him quiet. And Gurudas is quite a character. So he picked up a paperweight from Mr. Nair's table. And he was the editor of the Free Press Journal, which was one of the big daily newspapers in Bombay. So Gurudas picked up a paperweight from his table and held it up like this and dropped it on his table. But I don't think it shattered. And then, you know, then Mr. Nair sort of cooled down and sat down and kept quiet. But anyway, he was really harassing the devotees, and Tamal Krishna Goswami, who was the GBC for India, then used to compare him to Kamsa. And he would, because he would send his associate demons, like, to harass us. Yeah. And, like, he had one, his name was Ramu. He was supposed to be there to cut the coconuts, because there are about 150 coconut trees on the land. But he was actually sent to harass the devotees. So he would come with this big machete knife, and, you know, he would just stalk the property with this knife and, you know, brandish it and make all the devotees feel afraid. And then in the evening, when we would have the program, he would stand near the road, you know, brandishing the machete so people would be afraid to come. And sometimes Mr. Nair would, like, turn off the electricity, turn off the water. I mean, he was really trying to create a hellish situation for the devotees so the devotees would leave. And then he had some excuse for keeping the money, you know, that we had broken the terms of the agreement, which was all contrived by him. It was all manipulated by him. But that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to drive us off the land and then on some pretext cancel the agreement and keep the money. So, he was really a demon. So one day I was walking on the street. I was going preaching. I was actually near the corner of Princess Street. No, it was one little bit of Dobi Talal. I forget the names now. I think there was a cinema on the corner. I think it might be Metro Cinema. And in India, you know, there are vendors who sit on the sidewalk and sell magazines and newspapers. They may sell other things too. So there was a red light at the intersection, and I just happened to glance down at the newspaper, and there was like a big banner headline, a big bold type on the front page of the newspaper, you know, A.B. Nair is dead, with a big picture of Mr. Nair. And when I saw that headline, and then I read a little that he, you know, died suddenly of a heart attack, I actually felt like jumping for joy. I actually felt like dancing in the street right there. But then I thought, you know, we're supposed to be devotees, we're supposed to be compassionate. I was thinking, like, is this proper or not? You know, maybe I'm not acting like a Vaishnav should, or maybe not feeling like a Vaishnav should. So, Srila Prabhupada had a friend, he had so many friends in Bombay, but he had a friend named Dr. Singhal. So Dr. Singhal wrote him about the death of Mr. Nair. And although I never asked Srila Prabhupada the question directly, he answered something like, you know, it is good news that the demon Mr. Nyer is dead, and it is an occasion of rejoicing for devotees. And he said that even Prahlad Maharaj says that even saintly persons take pleasure when a snake or a scorpion is killed. So I felt my feelings were justified. And also the demons and the impersonalists come in the same category. You know, in the beginning when Maharaj was speaking, I was just from the very beginning when he said how we're insignificant living entities and we really have no qualification to understand the Lord or describe the Lord. You know, I was getting a little glimpse of the Lord, how great the Lord is, and how transcendental he is, and how beautiful he is. And the impersonalists who want to deny the personality of Godhead are just like the demons. They actually kill the form of the Lord with their arguments, with their speculations, and they make devotional service impossible. In fact, there are many nice verses in Srimad Bhagavatam which explain that the life of the living entity is devotional service, and that without devotional service, the living entity is as good as dead. It's just like, you know, like the bellows of a bat. He's breathing, but his breathing is like the bellows of a blacksmith, and so on. So our life is devotional service, and you know, without devotional service, we're dead. So the impersonalists who try to kill the Lord with their arguments and their speculation, they're also, you know, killing themselves, because they're depriving themselves of real life, which is devotional service. So Srila Prabhupada really fought against Mayavad very strongly. And you know, Srila Prabhupada had a disciple that sometimes questioned his calling them, you know, criticizing the Maya body so much. Why do you always criticize the Maya body so much? And Srila Prabhupada said, you ask that question because you're a Maya body. And I think the same disciple also said, you know, why do we have to call them demons? Prabhupada said, because they are demons. Unless you understand that they other demons, you cannot make any advancement in Krishna consciousness. But why do we have to call them demons? Because they are demons. And then he said, but you know, can't they become devotees? And then Prabhupada's mood changed. He said, yes, even devotees can become, even demons can become devotees. And then his mood changed. Which also indicates one of Srila Prabhupada's qualities, that he could be express anger for the sake of correcting a person or giving an instruction, but he didn't bear any grudge or malice against anyone. And as soon as the cause for the anger was removed, it was gone, you know. In Vrindavan, because she was there under the care of Nanda Maharaj, you know, for fear of Kamsa's harassment. And meanwhile, Rohini was already pregnant. The Srimad Bhagavatam explains that Rohini was already pregnant, but she had a dream that, like, a light was entering her womb, and at that time, Balaram entered her, left the womb of Devaki and entered her womb. So when he left the womb of Devaki, it appeared to the world that Devaki had a miscarriage. And thus, Balaram was transferred to the womb of Rohini. And then, I mean, there's evidence in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's really explained by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that Lord Krishna entered the womb of Yasoda in Vrindavan. The original Krishna entered the womb of Yasoda in Vrindavan, and Vasudev Krishna entered the womb of Devaki in Mathura. And, of course, when Krishna took birth from Devaki in the prison house of Kamsa, he manifested his four-handed form as Narayan. And then Devaki, out of maternal affection, was afraid for Krishna, even though he showed his four-handed form to convince her that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Still, as mother, she was afraid for him. So, you know, Vasudeva and Devaki offered prayers to Krishna, and he transformed himself into the form of a small baby. And then, as we know, Vasudeva carried baby Krishna to Vrindavan. And the Vasudeva Krishna from Mathura got absorbed into the original Krishna in Vrindavan. And then, this is very fascinating. So, the Bhagavatam explains that when Mother Yasoda gave birth, she was so fatigued from the labor of childbirth, she didn't know she had given birth to a son or a daughter. So when Vasudeva came to Vrindavan, he exchanged, you know, the baby Krishna from Mathura with the baby daughter of Yashoda, who was Subhadra, and he took her back to Mathura.
Yogamaya.
But what Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says is that Mother Yasoda, as she gave birth to a son and a daughter, and that the Vasudeva Krishna from Mathura sort of like entered into the original Krishna in Vrindavan. And there's different evidence that he quotes from Srimad Bhagavatam, like when Kamsa asked about the eighth child, you know, Devaki had to bring forth Yogamaya. And even though she was a girl and not a boy, Kamsa was still so fearful that he wanted to kill her by, you know, thrashing her down on the stone like he had done with the others. And when he lifted her up, she like flew out of his hands and like hovered in the sky and said that, you know, that the person who is going to kill you has already taken birth in Vrindavan. And, yeah, that's one of the evidences. And then another evidence is that Yogamaya is called the younger sister of Krishna. So if she was the daughter of Nanda and Yasoda and Krishna was the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, how would she be his younger sister? So she's his younger sister because the original Krishna also was born of Nanda and Yashoda. And there's other evidence when after Lord Brahma stole the cowherd boys and calves, and then he realized his mistake and came back and offered prayers to Lord Krishna. He referred to him as the son of the cowherd man, meaning the son of Nanda Maharaj. So, this is very intricate, and so anyway, Lord Balaram appeared, and then Krishna appeared, and then Gargamuni came. He was the priest, the family priest of the Yadu dynasty. And so Vasudev sent him to Vrindavan to do the horoscope for Krishna and Balaram. And, you know, because Nanda Maharaj didn't want Kamsa to know about Krishna and Balaram because he wanted to kill all the children born everywhere. So he had the name-giving ceremony in the cow shed in secret. And he, you know, he made certain predictions about Krishna and about Balaram. And, you know, he said that Balaram will be very strong and therefore his name will be Bala. And he will also give pleasure to the devotees, so his name will be Rama. But because he would unite the Yadu dynasty with he would be called Shankarshan, because Shankarshan means like one who attracts or who unites. So one of his other names is Shankarshan. But he's the original spiritual master, because what does the spiritual master do? The spiritual master gives the disciple knowledge of Krishna. So because he's the first expansion of Krishna, he's the first one to know about Krishna, other than Krishna. So he gives knowledge of Krishna, and the spiritual master is the servant of Krishna, as Maharaj said. So Balaram is the first servant of Krishna, so he's also the original spiritual master. And he helps us to engage in the service of the Lord, like the spiritual master does. So, of course, for us, he's more easily approachable in the form of Lord Nityananda, and therefore we approach Lord Nityananda for his mercy. But Lord Nityananda is Balaram, you know, just like Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. But in the form of Lord Chaitanya, he's more merciful than Krishna. So Lord Nityananda is also Lord Balaram, but in the form of Lord Nityananda, his mood is more merciful even than the mood of Balaram. But still, he's Balaram, and I'm sure that he's pleased that we insignificant living entities have gathered together here and are trying in our own feeble and awkward way to remember him and discuss him and hear about him. So I'm sure that his pleasure will be manifest in the mercy he gives to all of us here, that he is giving right now, and that he will continue to give, so he can give us spiritual strength so we can serve Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's servants. And he can give us spiritual pleasure so that we are encouraged to do more and more service. And the greatest mercy, which might even be the most difficult to get, would be if he could like attract all the different parts of our family together and so that we can like serve all as one family. Shri Baladev Prabhu Ki Jai.
Two questions. I was listening to some lectures you were talking about being personal. I heard that both the Brahmavadis and the Mayavadis are considered to be impersonalists, and the two examples, Brahmavadis are considered, and the Brahmavadis definitely changing to become devotees, the two examples given in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Shukadeva Goswami and the four Kumaras. I don't know whether I'm telling this right. The Brahmavadis consider everything as Brahman, and they recognize the personal picture of the Supreme God, and that is their distinct advantage over Mayavadi. And so you were telling that Prabhupada said that even the demon has got a chance to become devotee. So is there any example in Srimad Bhagavatam where an impersonalist has become a devotee, or any, I mean, any of our Vaishnava scriptures, other than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu changing, that is always, always there.
Well, see, the difference between the Brahmavadis and the Mayavadis, although they're both impersonalists, is that the Brahmavadis, as you said, they accept the transcendence of the Lord, like we also, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabdyate. So the Lord has three features. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, and they're all spiritual. So the Brahmavadi accepts the form of the Lord as spiritual, but he just prefers, he's just more inclined to the impersonal feature. He recognizes the personal feature as spiritual, but he's more inclined to the impersonal feature. And so he wants to merge. But the Mayavadis do not accept the form of the Lord as transcendental. They think that the form of the Lord is Maya, that the name of the Lord is Maya, that the name of the Lord is Maya, that the service of the Lord is Maya. It's all Maya, therefore they're Mayavadis. And they are offenders, because they're basically accusing Krishna of being a mundane, of having a material body. They think Krishna has a material body, and that everything about Krishna is material, and that service to Krishna is also material. So they are very offensive.
So there is no example anywhere.
Well, like you said, Sukadeva Goswami and the four Kumaras were impersonalists, but they became devotees. They became devotees.
This may be a little off from what you were talking, but this came to my mind. Usually in ISKCON, when we get initiated, the names given are servant of Krishna in some way or other, right? So the demons are considered as offenders, right? But how come sometimes like names like Pranambaha,
well, the word ha means killer of.
Oh, Pranambaha.
The demon is Palamba.
Okay.
Ha means killer. So Balaram, another name for Balaram is Palambaha, the killer of Palamba.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Just don't say Palambaha.
It's kind of, you know, at first when you hear, you know, you don't really recognize.
Yeah, we have to be careful.
Yeah.
Like, we had a devotee, well, initiated by Srila Prabhupada as Kamsahanta, which means the killer of Kamsa.
Yeah.
But just you know, to make it short, they used to call him Kamsa, and he didn't like it.
When was Subhadra born? Is it she born of Rohini, Subhadra?
No.
The Devaki?
No, Ananda.
Krishna's sister?
It's another wife of Vasudeva. Mother.
Is it?
Yeah. Another wife of Vasudeva.
That's what I understood.
What is that?
One of Yusoda.
Okay, so that?
That was the girl. The twin.
Oh, that is the younger sister,
yeah.
Yogamaya?
Yeah, Subhadra is Yogamaya.
Yeah. Oh. Mm-hmm.
So when they were switched, and she came to be with Devaki, Devaki was thinking that was that, and there was no...
But it isn't like Yogamaya when she flew out of the hand of Kamsa. I mean, isn't before she was born, well, I don't know whether it's been Krishna telling to her that you will be worshipped at Rudra, Kali and Chamundi and all that, and she goes out of Kamsa's hand and she becomes all that.
Yeah.
I never thought that she...
Yeah.
She never grew up. Actually, that she fell in Kanyakumari or Pratishtha in.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
Subhadra is actually what I understand.
Yeah.
That she's another... Uh-huh. Another wife, born in another wife.
Hmm.
Well, Yogamaya, Mahamaya, same person. Mahamaya is when Yogamaya is when the energy of the Lord is used to cover the conditioned soul, then it becomes Mahamaya.
Right.
And it's used to reveal the Lord, it's Yogamaya. It's the same energy. Prabhupada uses the example, it's like you put electricity in a unit. If it goes in a unit that is like a refrigerator, that electrical current is producing cool. You use it for a heater, it's a different effect, same energy.
Actually, I wanted to read this section, but because of time, I thought I won't. But I think we should, because I think it's very auspicious to read from Srimad Bhagavatam on such an occasion. And I saw you have the set. So you can bring us the first volume of the 10th canto.
Is there an explanation there? Or is it just mentioned that the name Sankarsha means one day of Rajas? Is there actually an explanation?
Oh, it might be brief. But...
No, never an explanation. Maybe it is. But...
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Garga Muni has come to the place of Nanda Maharaj, and Nanda Maharaj received him very nicely as a saintly person. And here Garga Muni speaks, 10.8.7. Shri Garga Uvacha Yaduna Aham Acharya Kyatascha Bhuvisar Vada Sutam Maya Samsritam Te Manyate Devaki Sutam. Garga Muni said, "My dear Nanda Maharaj, I am the priest, the guide of the Yadu dynasty. This is known everywhere. Therefore, if I perform the purificatory process for your sons, Kamsa will consider them the sons of Devaki." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Garga Muni indirectly disclosed that Krishna was the son of Devaki, not of Yashoda. Since Kamsa was already searching for Krishna, if the purificatory process were undertaken by Garga Muni, Kamsa might be informed, and that would create a catastrophe. It may be argued that although Garga Muni was the priest of the Yadu dynasty, Nanda Maharaj also belonged to that dynasty. Nanda Maharaj, however, was not at